This morning, Friday, January the 31st, was the first time to meet one of the poster children. It was Timothy Carroll, 6, who is a victim of hemophilia. The National Hemophilia Foundation had brought him to the White House to begin its campaign to help the 100,000 or so victims of the disease. He was a slight, frail, self-possessed, engaging little boy sitting on the yellow sofa in the oval diplomatic room when I got down there. I sat down by him. He was easy to talk to. Neither Timothy nor I were afraid of the cameras or the people, and it was sort of fun. His mother and father were there, as well as quite a host of newspaper people. He told me about his 6 brothers and children, brothers and sisters, and I told him about Linda and Lucy, and then I gave him the usual good wishes for getting better and a copy of the guidebook. It's a very small thing of doubtful value, but if it helps somebody put a dollar in the pot, why not? At lunch, just by purest chance, I wandered out into the hall and thereby happened to meet Lyndon's guests, who, amazingly enough, were the head of the Mormon Church, the very elderly Dr. Daniel McKay. I believe he's called the president of the Mormon Church. His son and one or two other of the outstanding members. They're a body of people I respect very much. And I was glad to get to meet them and glad that Lyndon is being exposed to so many of the facets of our life. Going to Utah in 1960 is something I'll always remember. I told him how the Mormons had stopped in Texas for some 10 or 15 years on their long, long journey across our continent, and how there's still a cemetery there close by to which it is said each year somebody returns and cleans up the graves. This afternoon, Linda Bird and Warren Lynn helped me out in meeting 100 high school students who are visiting Washington under a U.S. Senate program financed by the William Hearst Foundation. Surprisingly enough, the gentleman standing by my side, the chief sponsor of the program, Mr. George Hearst, had been introduced to me by a letter from F.D. Brown, my friend of university days of more than 30 years ago. There were 2 youngsters from each state, and it was especially nice for me that it was an Alabama girl who got her picture made with me. Her name was Lee Davis of Auburn, and she knew my Alabama cousins there. And the only trouble was that as she pinned the orchid on me, it's my face that shows and not hers. I wish we had a picture the other way around. One of the things that never ceases to bother me about this present situation, that about all that I seem to do about Alabama and Georgia and the southern background, is to give a little extra pressure of the hand of those youngsters who go down the line and announce that they are from those states. It's a mighty small exchange for the heritage of closeness I feel to them, but at this stage in our history, how to get in there for a useful public meeting. These youngsters were chosen because of very high grades and a special interest in public affairs, and I think it was a very well worthwhile thing for the Hearst Foundation and for me too. I enjoyed it. Tonight is another one of those things planned just for me. Self-indulgence, duty, no consideration. I went to dinner at the Abe Fortas's, just Linda Bird and Warren Lynn and I. We all dressed up in evening clothes. We sat around and had a delicious drink. We talked to 2 of the most fascinating people I know, Abe and Carol. And then we whisked off to see the Van Gogh exhibit at the Washington Gallery of Modern Arts. The Netherlands ambassador and Madame Van Royen, whom I've known for a long time in speech class, and Mrs. Adeline Briskin, the curator of the gallery, about whom I've heard such grand things, and the elderly beaming nephew of the artist, whose name is also Vincent van Gogh, escorted me around. It was a small gallery and a small crowd and a very impressive exhibit. I'd always thought of Van Gogh as brilliant colors, oranges, yellows, greens. The sunflowers, I guess, stick particularly in my mind. I didn't realize what a tremendous range he had. One of the saddest things was a painting of his own shoes. Very well-worn shoes they were. There was a period when he must have been very much influenced by Rembrandt or some of the early Flemish people, because all the colors are very dark indeed. And then there was one utterly charming that I loved, called, I think, The Harvest. There was just a spread-out farm scene, bright colors. I would adore to have it. Unfortunately, I don't have the 100 or so thousand that it would take to get it. When you think that the man only painted 10 years, and you see all the range that he went through and all the influences that took hold of him, it's really a most remarkable thing. And then, as his life approached its end, you see the brushstrokes getting broader and broader, or so it seems to me, and the very last canvas was a dark, brooding thing that looked like a storm coming up over the landscape and big black birds flying. I'm not sure, but I think that that is the last one that he completed before he committed suicide. Lennon would have liked this, actually, because the working people who were working were really working. They were lifting and toting and using their muscles. And there was one that was called the Potato Eaters. That was, well, folks of the soil, and they could have occurred in any country. It had a quality that reached around the world wherever people work. This is one of the evenings that I guess I have this present job to thank for, because perhaps if there weren't for the slight prod of imagining that would be of some public usefulness, I would not have gone to this exhibit, which I actually enjoyed very much.